Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station where we help those with ADHD pay attention to attention. With your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Topper.
Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Copper. Tonight, we're talking about when a professional can't help those with ADHD. And with us in our virtual studio is Dr. Ari Tuckman, one of our most favorite guests that comes on the show. He's very insightful. We always have a great time, and whether I'm uppity-uppity and think I know something or I don't, I always learn something from him and walk away with a different perspective, and we are all about attention and shifting that, so I get my money's worth every time we do that, or do this, if you will. Real quickly, tonight is Wednesday, February the 8th, in the year 2017 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Some announcements. As we speak, the 2017 ADHD Women's Palooza is taking place. Women's Palooza, this is the second time they've had it. They've got 35 ADHD experts talking about ADHD as it specifically relates to women. It started on Monday the 6th. It runs through the 11th. I am delighted and honored Linda Rogley and Terry Maitland invited me to be on there. I'm talking about a fun topic. Is your working memory working? I think that's airing on Saturday the 11th. But bottom line is, if you are female, you have ADHD, you can't miss this. Go to ADHDpalooza, PALOOZA.com. And as always, Dr. Barkley encourages me to remind everybody about ADHDfund.com, which is a crowdsourcing website to raise money for small-scale research worldwide. That's all of our announcements tonight. Before we get into the meat of the show, I did want to say that we are very proud of our relationship with CHAD. That's Children and Adults with Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. If you're not a member, you should be. They have some spectacular member benefits, but that's not the reason you should be a member. You should be a member because they advocate on behalf of the ADHD community. So they are the voice on Capitol Hill that's making a difference. And tonight's show is actually being brought to them. They have a great little tip. So let's roll that and we'll get on to the show.
Are you considering a medication holiday for your child? Possible benefits include time for a growth spurt unaffected by medication and relief from side effects. Be sure to weigh the benefits and the drawbacks because ADHD symptoms will return. And always discuss any changes with your child's health care provider first. For more information, visit the CHAD website, helpforadhd.org, H-E-L-P, the number 4, ADHD.org.
So thank you very much for CHAD for our longstanding relationship and the support of this show and bringing it to you, some of these tips and other tips that they share in our show. So let's get into tonight. The Dr. Ari Tuckman is with us. He's a clinical psychologist who specializes in diagnosing and treating children, teens, and adults with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. He's the author of 3 books, Understand Your Brain, Get More Done, the ADHD Executive Functions Workbook. One of my favorites, More Attention, Less Deficit, Success Strategies for Adults with ADHD and and the other book is Integrated Treatments for ADHD or Adults with ADHD, a practical, easy to use guide for clinicians. Sorry, I'm tripping up over my words tonight. He's a frequent speaker and given more than 300 presentations on ADHD and other topics. He's got over 100 podcasts and more than 2 million downloads of his More Attention, Less Deficit podcast. You need to check that out. You can find that at ADHDbook.com. Most importantly, I want to recognize Ari for his tireless volunteer work to the ADHD community at various organizations, but particularly recently at CHAD because he's been the co-chair of the last couple of conferences. And with all that, Ari, welcome to the show.
It's always great to be here.
It's always great. It's always a thrill. So our topic today is when a professional can't help, and we're talking in the context of ADHD. So I got to begin. You know, those with ADHD, they often seek out help, but in fact, are there limitations to like a psychologist or a coach or a therapist's ability to help with somebody with ADHD?
Well, I think there are. I think like with anything, I think it comes down to what is the person's willingness to be helped and what are they willing to do on their part in order to make use of that help. So, yeah, I think there are limits. Absolutely.
So people will come to me particularly a sponsor, and a sponsor could be a spouse or a parent or a worker, and they'll tell me that this person is really motivated and they want help. In that situation, the person says they want help, but in your world, does that mean that they really want help? Or how do you interpret that?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. So on the one hand, I'm certainly all in favor of somebody else pitching in terms of making the call, in terms of doing some of the research, in terms of doing some of the, you know, pushing, let's just be honest, the pushing to kind of get that person up and moving, to see a coach or a therapist or,
yep,
or whatever. You know, so I think there's obviously that's a good thing. Like, we take care of each other. But
yep,
the question then also becomes, well, why isn't this person taking those initial steps themselves? And who wants this more? You know, does the person,
yep,
making the call want it more, or does the person, the actual, you know, client, the planned client, want it more? So, you know, and I've had lots of times where indeed the planned client does want it and it's just, you know, logistics or whatever.
Yep. Yep.
But, you know, I've also had those other times where it's really the other person who wants it more and the planned client is getting kind of like dragged,
yep,
in or dragged along,
yep,
on it.
Well, it's interesting, Ari, because when I get a call, I call it the sponsor, that's somebody else who's kind of interested, and they say that the individual wants coaching. I go, well, you know, why do they want coaching? And the sponsor, well, they really want help. And I go, you know, what I have found often is that sometimes what they want is they want you off of their back. So it's, in other,
yeah,
words, let's relieve the pressure. So if I'm a college kid or I'm a spouse and I'm going to a coach, I can say, see, look at what I'm doing. I'm going to a coach. And it's like,
right,
take the pressure off me a little bit. They're really not showing up present for the coaching. They're not really engaging in what's going on, but they're showing up because what they want, again, I'm paying attention to attention. What clients often want is they really just want the other person to kind of go away. And if they show up at the coaching sessions, they can point to that, and it takes the pressure off a little bit. And in such situations, I really can't help them other than I'm taking the pressure off, but I'm not really moving them forward. It's a band-aid to a tactical situation.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, the thing about it is, you know, coaching or therapy or even taking medication, I mean, it's not like getting a haircut where you kind of sit passively and,
yep,
someone else does the work. You know, you need to be kind of actively involved in the process. And, you know, to use your favorite term, which you used a minute ago, you know, paying attention to attention. I think that, you know, in the case of the sponsor who wants it more, I think what's happening there is they're paying attention to the wrong thing. I think they're paying attention to, why do I think this person should,
yep,
you know, get this coaching or therapy? How do I think they would benefit, or how would I directly benefit? What they're not paying attention to is all those things that support the idea that, you know what, they're not really interested in this right now, or they don't see the need, or they have hesitations or reservations or something. You know, there's something there that's saying this is not the thing that they're interested in right now.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because all of a sudden there's this absolutely world famous quote that, you know, a sign of maturity is asking for help. Some guy named Ari Tuckman said it on the show, I don't know, a couple of years ago. Anyway, it's fascinating to me because I think that's a really true. I mean, since you told me that, I can't remember the show, we've done so many shows, it's really resonated because there's a study somewhere, I can't remember, at University of North Carolina, that all the kids that leave high school that are in a Section 504 plan or have an IEP, this is,
mm-hmm,
just not ADD, this is everything. Of that population, when they go to college, only 8% actually engages disability services at the college.
Yeah.
And I think that's a symptom of a flawed system. But at the same time, I think that's representative of these people, how much they really, really want help. And at that age, they're not mature enough to really seek out that help. And if they're not mature enough to really want to ask for that help, I think it's really difficult to engage. There's a lot of pressure, I think, on the psychologist or myself to kind of move them forward when they're showing up and they, you know, listen, I really don't want to be, if you don't want help, I can't do anything to help you. And I would,
yeah,
think that would ring true on your side.
Absolutely. I mean, it's very much the same. So, you know, especially if you're talking about teens or young adults with ADHD, it becomes that sort of much ado about nothing kind of scenario mm-hmm. where, you know, part of the problem is that they don't realize the ways that they're not doing as well as they should be. So, you know, they think they're doing kind of fine or fine enough, and you're just getting kind of like worked up for no good reason. You know, like, don't worry, I'll be fine here. Despite the fact that like their track record doesn't really suggest that they will be fine, but there's this over optimism about the future. So, you know, it's hard to convince someone to do something that they don't feel a need for. Now, to put that into attention terms, it may be that they're kind of paying attention to the wrong things, or they're not paying enough attention to certain things, which is that, yep. okay, this is the fourth semester in a row that this has worked out the way it's worked out, and you're not doing anything different about it. And this plan of I'm just going to study much harder next one doesn't seem realistic
yep.
because you've said that four times already.
Yep.
You know, but that's part of the problem. You know, it's that they're not paying attention to the right things there. so you can't convince them to do this thing that they don't see the benefit for.
So is that self-awareness, or is it just not registering with them?
You know, I think it depends. I think for some people, it really just is self-awareness in the sense that, like, they just don't see it. I think for others, it's more kind of like psychological denial, you know, like that they kind of know it's true, but they don't want to see it. You know, so I don't know, the alcoholic who's not ready to stop drinking, the person who keeps going back to that bad relationship, or they won't, you know, find a new job, even though the one they have is really terrible. You know, like, I think in those cases, it's more kind of like psychological denial. But I think for ADHD, sometimes there really can be kind of a lack of self-awareness there, if we're talking, especially when we're talking about like teens and young adults. But, you know, I mean, we all have our blind spots. But I think it's important, if someone is not interested in help, to try to figure out why they're not. And, you know, maybe then you can sort of figure out how to convince them that this would be beneficial. Or maybe the thing to do is that you need to change your part of it, if you're the sponsor or mm-hmm. you're the other person, to kind of step back and say,
yep.
you know what, I may not be able to make you do some things different. I may not be able to, you know, make you get this help that I really do think is going to be beneficial to you. So you know what, I'm going to back off and change what I can do. So again, putting in attention
yep.
terms, putting your attention on, like,
yep.
well, but what are the things that I can do different? Because doing these things ain't working.
Yep.
So I got to go to
yep.
plan B.
So you teed this up perfectly, because I want to go to break and I want to come back and expand on this a little bit, because I have a lot of, at the end of the day, whether it's lack of self-awareness, they're in denial, they're not registering, the outcome is still the same. And I want to kind of talk about that in ADHD terms and some specific stuff related to some of our other interviews. So we'll get into that. But before we go, everybody, you need to learn a bit more about Dr. Ari Tuckman. He's absolutely brilliant. He's a great writer. He's a great presenter. And if you're in Pennsylvania and you need some help, go see him. He's got a website, adultadhdbook.com. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an Edge Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function challenge make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more, or call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE to get your free college success guide.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to ADDCA.com and click on Find a Coach.
Managing ADHD is about pausing before you ponder and proceed. This opportunity to practice pausing is being brought to you by DigCoaching.com. The Attention Talk Network has over 450 interviews and more than 210 hours of programming, which is overwhelming if you think about it. That's why I've made my list top 10 favorite Attention Talk radio interviews. Download the list at www.digcoaching.com/ATR.
And now back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We're here with Dr. Ari Tuckerman, and we're having a conversation about when professionals can't help those with ADHD. And before the break, we were talking about, I don't know the right way. There's a gazillion different ways of saying this. The outcome is all the same, is that they're kind of going through the motions. And, you know, Dr. Tuckerman, I've said it before, and I've said it a gazillion times. I actually adore Dr. Russell Barkley's notion that ADHD is all about self-regulation, which is one of the most major things that's an executive function. And he talks about the brain being a two-level system. There's that automatic brain. And as I say, to put it in terms is, you know, automatically you reach out with your dominant hand. You don't think about it. And then there's the executive functioning brain that's effortful, that you have to step in and override that automatic brain. Maybe if you are to do something with your less dominant hand. And I actually will put people in exercises for them to experience how effortful it is for you to actually stop and think about what you're doing. And whether the person's not self-aware, they're not registering, whatever, I kind of feel like sometimes – people are in a rut of habit and behavior, and they're just kind of going along. And when I'm coaching them, it's like they're automatic. They're listening to you, but it doesn't register with them. And they just kind of keep – they have a habit, and they just keep doing that. And they don't engage their executive function to recognize and pause and notice it, to override it. So is that self-awareness, or is it not really registering with them? Or are they telling themselves a story? I think no matter what, you end up in the same place. But again, it's like they're on this autopilot, and you can't snap them out of it. Is that, I mean, in the simplistic terms, can we lump all this stuff together?
Yeah.
Or is that too general?
I mean, I think that some of this is that, kind of like you said, we default back to our old habits. We default back to our old ways of interpreting things, unless something kind of like jars us out of that. But I think that even before that moment, there's something we said for intention. And, you know, the kind of the intention to pay attention, you know, or the intention to really take it in and be effortful about how you process it, and to not just kind of, you know, I don't know, like go autopilot on it where it doesn't really register. So, like, I don't know, the thing that really kind of sticks out for me is that, you know, we have an alarm on our house, and like every night my wife likes to set the alarm in case like the squirrels break in or something. Like, I don't know who the hell we're protecting ourselves from. But so, you know, if she goes in before me and I'm the one kind of walking past the keypad, sometimes I'll set it and sometimes I won't, because I really just don't care about whether the alarm is set. Like, I'm gonna be completely honest, and she knows this, right? But like,
yep,
because I don't see the need for it. Like, I don't see the
yep.
benefit of having the alarm on through the night. So, you know, like, is it that I'm forgetful that I don't turn it off? Well, not really, because I'm not that forgetful in other things. Not that I'm perfect, but like, you know, I'm generally pretty good. But I'm forgetful about it because I don't care that much about it. Now, if I really cared, or if there was some great reward for setting it or a great punishment for not, I probably would be a lot better about it. But it's this thing where it's like I tend to forget it because it's not that important to me. So kind of like by the same token, if I'm in a coaching or therapy session, I'm not really sure why I'm there. I'm not really that interested because I'm not feeling the pain, so I don't see the benefit. Or maybe I feel the pain, but I don't see the connection of how talking to you is going to make it any better. You know, it's like I don't have that intention there to really kind of process what you're saying and to do that effortful work of thinking about it and to, you know, challenge some of what I'm already thinking. So, you know, I think there's that piece of it too, that if someone is kind of like forced into treatment, they may not have the buy-in to then be motivated to put in the effort to make it better.
This is bringing up all kinds of stories. And real quickly, we have somebody in our chat room that's actually saying that they're surprised that some people are not necessarily compliant on this, and they kind of go through the motions. And I think this is the epicenter for me that's kind of interesting, because there's this space, and I think there's about probably 50 different little parts of this. But at the end of the day, again, if that person's not registering it, it's just not going to happen. And Ari, when you were talking a second ago, I couldn't help but remember I was coaching this individual one time, and we would talk about that, and they would say, "Oh, I need to think about that." Like, okay, I need to go think about that. Like, okay, I'm going to plan to go think about that, but they never actually got to the act of thinking about it. They would think about how they needed to think about it, but it never registered them that they actually needed to sit down and make some time and think about it. And I would mirror that back with them and said, you know, we've been talking for a month about you thinking about it, you haven't gotten to. And they said, wow, you know, they finally said, well, there's a lot of effort in that. I'm like, well, I know. We have to engage in that effort. I mean, if we're not going to expend the effort, we're not going to get there. And then it was funny because I was in this surreal conversation because they were giving me the words. They were saying the right things, but it wasn't like it was really registering that they actually needed to do something. They kind of weren't getting it. And these are the type of people that are the epicenter of what's kind of going on, because they'll come. And there's people that I've coached for a period of time. It's like Groundhog Day. We're kind of covering this stuff, and like 3 months later, all of a sudden they have this huge epiphany, like, oh, I get it. But they're going through some motions. But to me, there's this crowd. Again, they think about thinking about it, or they're on autopilot, or like I said, it just doesn't register. And in these situations, there's a certain level that I don't know if you can get to them or I can get to. We can certainly kind of create the environment, but if they don't notice it, you can't force it. You can't force them what to pay attention to, and that's when it breaks down. And that's where I think the hard part, because I think the sponsors have a real great expectations, but again, it comes down to that individual.
Yeah, although, you know, I think that pointing out that you did there, that, you know what, we've been talking about this for a month, that you're going to think about it, but you never get around to thinking about it. So, so why is that? You know, so it's kind of like what you did is you changed the conversation in an important way, because, you know, it's sort of, or as what I sometimes say, I kind of describe it as like talking about the process or going up a level or something. So,
yep.
You know, instead, you know, so you could shift it to, let's talk about setting a reminder and scheduling a time to think about this or something. Right.
Yep.
And in some situations that actually is the way to go. But I think that in this case, I think it's more important, it's more helpful to talk about, like, so what's happening here that you say, oh, I need to think about that, but then you don't. You know, what is it that's going on there? What is it that's getting in the way? When you say, I should think about this, do you actually mean I should think about this? Or is this kind of just a turn of phrase that you found helpful to get people to shut up and leave you alone, and it just buys you time and hopefully they forget about it also? Or do you genuinely mean it at the moment you say it, but then it doesn't carry forward? Because if that's the case, then setting an alarm is helpful. But if we don't know what the problem is yet, let's not jump to the solutions, because we might be solving the wrong problem, which means that we're not going to solve it.
God, this is a great conversation. So there's so much of what you said. I wish you could kind of replay, but you said a second ago, like, there's these phrases that you say. And I was like, it's funny. You ever walk up to somebody and go, hey, how you doing? Or somebody says,
yeah,
how you doing?
Exactly.
You go, I'm okay. How you doing?
How are you?
And then they go, how you doing again? And it goes on like, well, we've been through that. Can we stop? Because it's like this programmed response. And it's like they have a programmed response, which goes back to, it's that automatic brain that kind of goes up. They don't stop and look, I got to think about it. And, you know, I was coaching, I briefly just shared this with you before we got on. I was coaching this woman for a period of time about memory. And, you know, it sounds like your strategy to remember things is to rely on your memory. Yeah. Well, you know, we umpteen times we had proven that's what happened. But the bottom line is her memory, particularly her working memory, didn't work. So it's like, okay, if you're relying on your working memory and it's not working, we should do something different. Yeah, like, I should not do it. Maybe I should write it down. So it's funny because this is like Groundhog Day. We're going over and over and over. One day I'm like, we're going through this stuff and like we were making some headway. And all right. So homework is X. Yeah, da, da, da. And we're getting ready to sign off and said, hang on a second. How are you going to remember this? And they sat there and they go, well, I got to remember it. And it was like, oh, I guess if I rely on my working memory, I'm not going to remember it. Or excuse me, if I rely on my memory, I'm not going to remember. Like, we've talked about that for like the last hour and what we should do about it. And she goes, oh, I guess I should write it down. And so after going through that for a period of time, we had done it ad nauseum, but it never really registered that, oh, I should do it right now. And I said, you know, well, you can whip out a sheet of paper to do that, but I'm the prompt. She's relying on me to say you should write this down right now, which is not empowering because, if she, you know, she had everybody in her life doing that stuff. And this is the epicenter of that crowd that, as much as I can take them to water, I can't make them drink. I can salt the hay to make them thirsty, but at the end of the day, there's a certain amount of inside that actually has to come out and make that happen. And again, when you had said phrase, I do think that there's automatic responses in here. Sometimes I actually think that they don't actually know how to go about thinking about that. I mean, they know that they need to do it, but – and I've actually said, do you want some coaching on how you would go about thinking about it? And it's funny because it doesn't even register with them. And I can't coach anybody. I can't – I don't. As a coach, you don't set the agenda. You can offer that, and if they take it, you go. But if they don't, you don't. And so – I just think this space is just kind of fascinating because as try as we might, we can't change inside of their head what they're paying attention to, which is the trick, isn't it?
Right. Well, but I think what you can do is sort of point it out. Hey, here's something I noticed.
Yep.
And then kind of bring their attention to it. Now, you know, they may make a different decision about it at that point, but at least you've made them aware of it. And now it actually is a decision as opposed to these kind of like autopilot, almost like, I don't know, micro decisions, non-decisions, whatever. So, I mean, I think that that's part of what coaching and therapy is about. It's helping people gain some of this awareness of what they do and perhaps why, and so that they can then make more kind of conscious and intentional choices about it, not just autopilot it.
Yep, it's kind of wild. So we want to go to break and come back. And there's some other areas I think that's fascinating to me because I've actually – there's a few characteristics of some situations that the person wants help, and I'd like to help them, but there's another factor that's imposed on that situation that makes it difficult. So we'll get into that when we get back after the break. Real quickly, to learn more about Ari, go to adultadhdbook.com, and we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You can't go off to college with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential. You can also call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE and get a free college success guide.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
The Attention Talk Network has over 450 interviews and more than 210 hours of programming, which is overwhelming if you think about it. That's why I've made my list top 10 favorite Attention Talk radio interviews. Download the list at www.digcoaching.com/ATR.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here with Dr. Ari Tuckman talking about how much professionals want to help and sometimes things that get in the way of actually kind of making that happen. Dr. Tuckman, we've talked about sponsors and removing the pressure as a reason people go to coaching, but they're not present. We've talked about this kind of autopilot, just kind of pre-programmed stuff that's just kind of there. Another thing that I want to kind of talk about is I'm going to tell this is a story to illustrate a situation. I was working with a professional at one point in time, and we were dealing with something with regard to digital means. And they came to me and they said, "I'm not very organized about this." And I said, "Yes, you are." And they said, "No, I'm not." And after talking to them, they said, "Oh, I guess that I am." They had this system in order to contact or send emails out, and it wasn't efficient, but they had been doing it for a long time, and they'd been doing it so long that it was an automatic behavior. They didn't have to think about it. And we talked about where they needed to migrate to get to. And the person really wanted to get to a more efficient system, but their business was so – it was really very intense. When they went to office, it required an enormous amount of pressure and executive functioning. And as we started to get into this, the person would begin to try to adjust to this new system. But every time the pressure kind of came in, they would revert back to the old system because they didn't have to think about it. And this is a situation where they wanted to make that move, but the habit was so mindless for them. As they described, when I would have to stop and think about what I was doing to switch to the new system, and we've had some shows about how it's more difficult for those with ADHD to form a habit, it slowed them down and created problems in their work. And while they acknowledged that the long-term benefits were better than the short-term costs, they weren't willing to sacrifice it. And at the end of the day, it was kind of funny because they're like, "I'm not going to go to the new system because I can't invest that time today." And that's a situation where I think I helped them get over the emotional strife of it, but still there's so much pressure and so much that had to be done, they couldn't spend the effort to reprogram their brain. What are your thoughts on that? Have you experienced any of that before?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's – I mean, in the bigger picture, this is that whole balancing act between the demands and rewards of the present – versus the demands and rewards of the future, or the, you know, rewards or prices,
yep.
Rewards or costs of the future. So yeah, I mean, it's that thing of like, oh, you know, it's like Covey's thing of sharpening the saw, you know, like stopping to sharpen the saw.
Yep.
Like, oh, I'm too busy to create a more efficient, I don't have enough time to create a more efficient system. Despite the irony of like, well, but if you had a more efficient system, you would have more time. And, you know, I think it just, it becomes a matter of finding a time to just bite the bullet and do that new thing. And, you know, it may be that you're lucky enough that you can sort of wait for a better time, if such a thing exists, and do it then. And then maybe it's not so cumbersome a transition. But, you know, frankly, sometimes it's just like there's never a good time. So it might as well just be now. Like, let's just bite the bullet and just do this now. And to really kind of put your attention on and remind yourself about what are the rewards of doing this. You know, I will pay a price right now in the short term, but what are the long-term rewards? And to keep that kind of front and center in your thinking, because we tend to get a little bit mentally lazy and we'll focus on the price right now and maybe ruminate on that or complain about that, but not think beyond into the future. And then the future comes and then we're like, God damn it, here I am again.
Yep. And that risk and reward it's kind of fascinating, because I've actually coached people like on that. What's the risk? What's your tolerance for risk on this? Because if you are going to go do that, you're going to risk these types of things to make that decision, because you keep falling back into the moment. And it's fascinating to me, because the number of people, as when they understand their tolerance risk, how they choose not to do it. But at the end of the day, some, they have a hard time with perspective. Some days they'll wake up and they're on the riskier side. Other days they wake up and they feel a little less risky. It kind of reminds me, there's a Warren Buffett thing about a letter that he talks about, how imagine you're in the stock market and you have a business partner called Mr. Market. And Mr. Market's an amazingly emotional guy. Some days he wakes up, he's really euphoric, and other days he's really down and depressed. But on any given day, he's going to sell you his stock based off of his mood that particular day. And it's really kind of a fascinating thing, but the environment affecting that person's mood changes their risk tolerance, go back and forth, and they tend to spin around a little bit. And as a coach, I'm not going to make the decision for them because it's not my place. And sometimes that can be a little bit of a challenge because that's a level of self-awareness that the person's got to get themselves out of to say, hey, listen, I'm having a hard time settling on the risk to make this investment to kind of make the change. And you get into a loop, and that can be really challenging sometimes because as a coach, my job is not to tell people what to do, but actually have them choose that. And I can coach them around how they go do that stuff. But these are just areas that can be a little bit of a challenge that are there. And what I'm hoping from the show tonight is that people are aware of some of this stuff as they go into it and do it with open eyes. So, again,
I think that as a coach or a therapist, we can help our clients sort of notice these things, because we don't have that same emotional investment compared to if it's a family member, if it's a romantic partner. You know, we're much more invested in what they do, and the other person knows it. So it's like they know that we have an agenda here. But, you know, with a coach or a therapist coming then from objectivity, like or neutrality at least, you know, our position is my goal is to make you aware of this. What you do with it, that's really on you. You know, like you will reap the rewards or pay the price. And I think knowing then that there isn't that other agenda, the person then can look at that, you know, potential reward or price a little bit more clearly, and so that they're just looking at that, whereas opposed to, I think the tug of war becomes sort of the smoke screen that gets in the way of really seeing what they're doing and really seeing what their options are. You know, so that's why, you know, you and I can say stuff and get a result that is exactly the same frickin' thing that their parent or romantic partner is saying. But when we say it, it goes across better because we don't have any of that emotional entanglement.
Yep. But, and that's one of the key things about, I think, both of our businesses is the level of trust in the safe environment for people to come in and feel comfortable talking and be able to go back and not have to deal with us on a regular basis. And so sometimes when we build that safe environment, which, by the way, sometimes takes a little while to develop before you can actually help somebody, is we can say things that they'll be open or they'll pay attention to it because they're not into that automatic. You know, Melissa Orlov, I love it how she talks about relationships. There's an ADHD symptom, and the partner has an emotional reaction to that symptom, and the ADHD person then has an emotional reaction to that emotional reaction. Mm-hmm. So she calls it symptom, reaction, and it kind of bleeds out of control. But those emotional reactions are an automatic response, and you've got to reverse that cycle a little bit. Whereas if they come in and we have a safe environment, we're saying the same thing, but it's not with that emotional turmoil and the baggage where they're not thinking, they're automatically reacting, which goes back to it's a self-regulation issue that we had talked about kind of at the beginning. There's one other area that I want to kind of touch on that I think is kind of fascinating, and it's very difficult sometimes to work with because of our society, and that is I can coach you to be more of who you are. I cannot coach you to be somebody that you're not. And a lot of people will come in, and I think I can help them understand what they do flawlessly and what they're really good at. But if they don't want to be that type of person, I really can't change them. And that mindset can be really challenging. And I always kind of go to like athletics and stuff that's material. Like I can coach a zebra to be a zebra, but I can't coach a zebra to run in the Kentucky Derby because it wasn't bred for it. It's a horse. But it wasn't bred to win the Kentucky Derby. It was bred to survive on the Serengeti Plain. And that can be a real challenge for those people that are locked on of who they want to be. What are your thoughts on that?
No, I think that's absolutely right. And, you know, it's sort of funny because I had a similar kind of a thought before you started talking about this, which is the whole thing about, like, you know, there are certain things in terms of individuals or couples or families where there's just differences of preference that are not about ADHD or whatever. It's just about you know, just different desires. So like kind of the joke that I have is, you know, I had this couple I was seeing where for the woman, it was really important that the beds were made before she left the house. For the guy, there is no amount of medication and therapy and coaching that will make him want or give a crap about made beds. You know, like this is not an ADHD thing. This is a, I don't care about made beds thing. Right. So, but you know, if she frames it as an ADHD thing, she's kind of looking in the wrong place. So, you know, some of this has to do also with, you know, figuring out like, well, what does this person want? What is going to be appealing to them? What is going to be of value to them? And trying to focus on that, or at least to frame the sales pitch, you know, from that angle. Now, you know, having said that, I think there is a certain element here of being able to ask of others. So, you know, I think it's a reasonable request for this couple I was seeing, for the wife to say, you know what, you don't have to care about made beds. As long as you're not morally opposed to made beds, then it becomes a different conversation. But as long as you're not morally opposed to it, I would really appreciate it. I would feel better walking out the door if you could help me make sure that the beds got made. You know, and that's just kind of a gimme kind of a favor. And then presumably he had some gimme favors as well. And, you know, like that's fine. Like we are good to each other, hopefully. So, you know, but that's done out of desire to be a good partner, not out of there's something wrong with this person that they don't see the beauty and serenity of a nicely made bed or something. But you got to get to a certain point to be able to make those requests and have them honored.
And so I'm a little off topic on this, but you spurred something. I want to process this a little bit because I think it can illuminate part of this space. Is imagine that you have somebody who organizationally visual clutter distracts them. They have a hard time concentrating. Mm-hmm. These are the people that are compelled to clean everything up and put it all away. I've had ADDers that are like that. They call themselves OCD. I don't think that they are. They just need to remove all the visual distractions because those are nags, and they can't focus on something that's hard unless it's kind of put away. Now, that's imagine that you have a person whose brain that's wired like that. Now you've got a spouse that's the opposite. If they have something to do, they have to leave something out visually. It reminds them, because if you put it away, it's out of sight, out of mind. You might as well throw it in the trash. But to leave something on the counter is like, oh, I got to remember to take this. Or I've told this story before. My older son, he used to have a pile of athletic and school stuff next to the door. He would have to trip over it on the way out. But that was his reminder. If it was there, he knew he had to take it. Now it was an ugly pile, but it worked for him. So now you got two people that have opposite brain wiring. One is it's visual clutter to me and I can't concentrate. And the other one is, but if I don't put it out, I'm not going to remember it. That's in conflict. And if you've got one of them that's like, I've got to change for the other one, it's like, I've got to become a male or a female. I can't get there from there. I can coach you on how you can have different zones for that to coexist, but I can't change you on that. And that mindset of I've got to be the type of person that remembers things when I put them away. I mean, there's no amount of medication or self-regulation if their brain really doesn't work like that. And that's difficult to coach, particularly when there's pressure from the spouse to do it this way. And it's kind of funny because sometimes it's the ADD spouse that's really controlling on the other one. And sometimes it cracks me up how it's the non-ADHD spouse that's imposing this. I'm like, listen, just because they have ADHD doesn't mean it's their problem. You got to kind of work that stuff out. And that space to me is very difficult to coach because it's in conflict until they go, oh, we are different. We have to come together and work to kind of coexist. But Ari, tonight we've talked about a whole bunch of different things, and it all comes down to a shift of attention. Is the person paying attention? Do they want help to get rid of the pressure, or do they really want help? Are we able to create the environment for them to actually get the fact that they're on autopilot and they actually need to engage their executive function and they need to do something? Is it about us trying to say, hey, listen, you're trying to do the engine when this has happened. What are the cost benefits of that? And there's a certain amount of that you and I can salt the hay. We can create the environment, but we actually do it for them. And that is an area where if a person's against it or struggling or they're resisting it, that's an area that's hard for you and I. Because we can't get in their head and do it. Does that make sense? I mean, in a bow, that's the crux of the issue.
Yeah. So I think it then becomes a situation where you either need to find, as the coach or the therapist, you either need to find something that is of interest to them, that is motivating, that they are willing to put their attention on. Or alternatively, it becomes a matter of the other person, the sponsor, as you call it, like, you know, the other person to do some things different on their end, either to take care of their own happiness directly, or to, I don't know, like to stop kind of bailing this other person out so that they have the luxury of not being able, of not having to pay attention to it. You know, so like, I don't know, the parent who's constantly, you know, running late papers and soccer cleats back over to the school because their kid keeps forgetting it. But, you know, for the kid, this isn't really a problem. I text mom and magically it shows up. What's the problem here? you know, but if mom stops bringing them, I mean, this is kind of a simplistic example, but if mom stops bringing them, well, now the kid's got a dilemma, you know, and he's certainly going to be a lot more aware of the fact that, you know, damn, I really kind of suck at bringing things to school. Now, he may not choose to do anything about it, but at least he's certainly going to be more aware of it than he is when mom does it, especially because, you know, the conversation would go like this. I bring stuff to you at least once a week. No way. It's only once a month.
Yep.
Probably not even that. Right. It's like they're not even talking about the same thing because he's not even noticing it when it's happening. So that's why he's underreporting and she's pissed off and resentful, which I can kind of understand. So she's possibly overreporting it. You know, so they're not even paying attention to the same data set to be able to have like a reasonable discussion about what's going on there.
So I'm going to get on a little bit of a soapbox and I'm going to actually. Well, it's one of the reasons why I love having you on the show so much, Ari. To me, I'm in the business of coaching people's attention. At the end of the day, only Ari Tuchman can witness what Ari Tuchman's paying attention to. It's all inside your head. I can't see it. And because I can't see it, you can't see mine. So you actually have nothing to compare it to. And so I think, in a weird sense, oversimplified, what you do and what I do are the same thing, is we actually coach or we're trying to help you with attention. Only, as I like to describe it sometimes, I'm just like an athletic coach, but there's a major difference is that a basketball coach can witness, they can see what's happening on the court. I'm blindfolded. I can't see it. All I can do is ask questions and help that person discover what to pay attention to in oversimplified fashion. And that's why this show is about paying attention, what people are paying attention to. So at the beginning of it is when people say they want help, as a coach, I'm going, what are you paying attention to? Do you really want help? Or do you really want everybody off of your back? You want to come to coaching, but you have two different reasons of doing it. One I can help you with, and one I can help you with symptomatically, but I can't move you forward for what everybody else thinks. Another one is, as I'm trying to help you, I'm mirroring back to you that you keep relying on your memory to remember, but you're not registering it to do something different. It's in that moment you go, oh, I think I should write it down, or I should do this. That's a level of attention that we can dance around it. We can stand on our head. I got all kinds of lenses and all kinds of tools, but I can't actually make that happen. And at the end of it is sometimes is your situation you got to pay attention to is that it's an opposite of some other people. So at the end of the day, the ones that we can't help are the ones that resist us and all of our games and all of our tools having them shift. And I love what we do. It's a puzzle every day. I mean, everybody's completely different. It's fascinating. But there's that crowd where if they block it or they don't get it, I can dance all I want. But at one level, there's a point where it actually has to register with them, and I can't control it. Only that person can, and that's the trick. That's the fun part of what we do, but it's the challenging part of what we do. And I hope this illuminates to our listeners out there, while Ari loves what he does and I do what we do. We do what we can, but at the end of the day, there's this level of this thing has to click, and we can't push that button. That said, Ari, any comments on that? Anything that we haven't touched that we need to before we wrap this up?
You know, I think that in those situations where you've tried and it's just not clicking in, I think that to say, you know what, I just don't think this is working, like that can be an intervention unto itself. You know, that may kind of jar their attention a little bit to say, to realize like, oh, this isn't working. You know, like, I don't know if that will click, but ironically, it's sometimes the thing that clicks the most is to tell them that it isn't working, you know, and that you need to kind of back off and they need to figure this out on their own. So, you know, but I think it's, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a good question or this whole topic in general, I think is an important one because, you know, we all have those situations where we have people in our lives that we wished would do something different and, you know, we can't get them to do it. And, you know, I think at those times, then it's a matter of shifting our attention back to, well, what can I control? What are the things that I can do? What are my options? What are my alternatives? What can I do differently in this situation? Either to get this other person to notice it a little bit better or to take care of my own happiness, even if they don't notice it and do anything different.
And that's one of the reasons why so many of our shows are all attention based. I love to have you on because you get it, because we're about shifting it. Like, we did a thing on acceptance. I have to go back in my notes. It was powerful for me because, you know, just because you accept it doesn't necessarily mean you have to like it, but that's a shift of intention to deal with it in the moment, as opposed to fighting it, to say, hey, listen, I don't like it, but I got to move on. These are little types of things that we can talk about, but there's a certain amount of it's got to click with them. And that's the art of what we do. So with that, I need to wrap it up for time. Ari, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate you. You are the perfect guy for the perfect topic. So thanks for coming on the show tonight.
Well, as always, thanks for having me.
Everybody, if you don't know Ari Tachman, you should go check him out. Go to adultadhdbook.com. We hope you. We made you think tonight. I hope you learned something. Catch us next week for another great edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.